Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, September 15th, and I'm Nat Cardos, reporting for KMED. In tonight's news, Eureka celebrates its newly completed Da Yas Park, and Assemblymember Chris Rogers and State Senator Mike McGuire urge pause on THPs in Jackson Demonstration State Forest. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
There was a lot of jubilation in Eureka over the weekend with the opening of a multi-million dollar park project, Daniel Mintz reports.
The upgrading of Eureka's parks took a big step on September 13th, when the former 2030 park was reopened in its new incarnation, Da Yas Park. Located between California and Union Streets, the park has expanded its variety of recreational opportunities with roller hockey, hard surface soccer, and full and half-court basketball facilities. A key feature of the park is its striking egret and crab-themed playground. A picnic area and restroom facility are also included. It's a dramatic change from the former park, which was mostly an open grassy space fringed by minimal playground and basketball areas. The park's $6.4 million development is paid for with a state grant. During a well-attended grand opening ribbon-cutting event, Eureka Mayor Kim Burgell spoke to an enthusiastic audience.
We do. I just want to say that this project has been in the works for a very long time, and I'm grateful to all of the staff who really came forward and made this happen. So I'm not going to talk a long time. I just want you to know how much I appreciate all of you being here today to celebrate this glorious day together, because that's how we roll it out in Eureka. We're a community, we're together, and that's how it goes.
The park is in Councilmember Katie Moulton's ward, and she described the towering egret play structure behind the audience as, quote, a stunning piece of sculpture. Moulton highlighted the park's social significance.
And I wanted to sing the praises of the staff that believes and the community that believes that public spaces are important. This is your park. This is your park to enjoy for free. This is your park to bring your kids, to bring your family, to bring your friends, to bring your out-of-town visitors, to meet your community. Every time I go to a park, I meet somebody new, and sometimes it's awkward, and sometimes it's amazing, but that's what these spaces are for. Not just to get out and get some activity, and get some exposure to the sun and to touch grass and have healthy bodies, but to have a healthy community that is built on being in places together, that's built on building connections together. So please, enjoy this park. Come here every time you have a chance. Make new friends.
Project manager Robin Prasker noted the park's founding in the early 1950s by the 2030 Club, a now disbanded civic group made up of 20 to 30-year-old men. With a new era in effect, the park's new name was chosen by residents who participated in a choosing process in collaboration with the Wiyot tribe. Da Yas translates from the Wiyot language to where the cypress are, referring to the park's cypress trees. In an interview, Prasker described the park's features.
This park was intentionally designed to renovate 4 acres into a space that serves all ages and abilities. Multi-generational use is very important in parks to mobilize everybody here to use it in different ways. Something that we all love are the curved walking paths throughout the park. All ADA compliant, whether you're in a walker or a scooter, you can experience that circulation. We have outdoor fitness equipment, which is new to us in city parks. And then we also have a restroom, which we know if you have water in a restroom, you're going to stay longer, you're going to play longer, you're going to reap those recreational benefits longer.
Years in the making, the park's overall design was shaped by rounds of community input. Many residents supported changing the park's name, with Da Yas emerging as the most liked. Development of the park included removal of two large cypress trees, however, prompting a neighbor to sarcastically suggest calling the park "Where the Cypress Were" during the open public comment period of a recent city council meeting. But Prasker said overall public comment favored creating sight lines to maintain visual contact with children, and planting of new trees was done. Two more projects, the redevelopment of Carson Park and the development of playground and recreational facilities at Halverson Park, are expected to be completed next year. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
On September 5th, California Senate Leader Mike McGuire and Assemblyman Chris Rogers sent an open letter to CAL FIRE asking to put a hold on timber harvest plans, THPs, for the Jackson State Demonstration Forest until a forest management plan is updated and approved by the board. In the letter, they cite that the need for an updated forest management plan is that it's, quote, nearly 10 years old and outdated, end quote. The last forest management plan for the Jackson State Demonstration Forest was made in 2016. The letter also addresses the fact that a full environmental impact report has not been completed since 2007, and that they now want CAL FIRE to complete the full EIR process for the 2026 Forest Management Plan update, with the inclusion of robust tribal consultation and community involvement. KMUD News spoke with Melody Meyer, conservation attorney at the Environmental Protection Information Center, EPIC, in Arcata, for more information.
Jackson Demonstration State Forest is managed by the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, and they are also the ones who write timber harvest plans for the forest. This is a forest where they are supposedly demonstrating good sustainable forestry practices for the state and for timberland owners. However, unfortunately, they've still been sort of stuck in the past where they're doing some unsavory timber harvest practices, including doing group selection harvesting where they make large openings in the forest. The management plan still allows them to do clear cuts in certain parts of the forest. So this timber harvest plan is the most recent one that has been put forth by CAL FIRE, actually after quite a long pause since around 2021, when there was a lot of community protests and tribal government consultations that were seeking to stop some other potentially damaging timber harvest plans.
Part of the reason why THPs have paused since 2021 was due to protests and concern over the method that was going to be used. The method, known as group selection harvesting, is essentially a small-scale clear-cut of trees in a given area that are harvested over time so that the entire stand will be cut within approximately 40 to 50 years. Meyer elaborates more on the need for updated forest management plans.
The forest is required to come up with a forest management plan under the Forest Practices Act, and this plan sets forth all of the different management options and sets certain restrictions and protections for the forest as well. This management plan was reviewed under the California Environmental Quality Act way back in 2007, and this was the last time a full environmental impact report was done. In 2016, CAL FIRE did a forest management plan update, and they relied on that 2007 environmental impact report. Now they're attempting to update it again, which is good because it's due for an update. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be brought into more of a modern view of forestry and forest management. However, they're not going to do an environmental review process. They are claiming that they are exempt from this requirement, and they actually made a rule change in 2020 that kind of flew under the radar for a lot of folks, where they said that a forest management plan is information collection, and so that doesn't require them to do a full review under the California Environmental Quality Act. Of course, we disagree with this. We think that creating a management plan is a lot more than information collection. It's setting forth how the forest is going to be managed, and all timber harvest plans have to comply with a management plan as well. So that's why we've been pushing for this full updated review.
EPIC is not the only group fighting for paused THPs and an updated forest management plan. The Jackson Forest Advisory Group, JAG, was created so that the public could have a say in defining the future of the Jackson Demonstration Forest. The group was founded in 2008, authorized by the management plan for the Jackson Forest, approved in January of that year. Senate Leader McGuire and Assemblyman Rogers speaking out about the issue is regarded as a big win for those defending Jackson Demonstration State Forest.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is a huge deal for us. We're really excited to see Chris Rogers and Mike McGuire working together, especially on this issue. It's something that, because Jackson is the largest state forest, it affects a lot of how forest management plays out across the state. And so having them speak directly to CAL FIRE, telling them that there needs to be full environmental review for this important forest, and we need to pause any timber harvest plans until then, until that update comes, we're extremely happy and grateful that these elected officials are getting involved in this way.
The JAG will be having a forest management plan workshop via Zoom September 22nd from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. For more information, the website is facebook.com/CalFireMEU. In state news, Common Cause opposes gerrymandering but sees reason for California redistricting plan, KPFA's Anthony Perrazzo reports.
The nonpartisan fair voting group Common Cause generally opposes gerrymandering, but California's Proposition 50 redistricting plan is making things a bit more nuanced. Maya Chupkov with the California chapter of Common Cause hosted a conference talk about the gerrymandering of voting districts by state governments, especially in California. She and other Common Cause representatives maintain their position against gerrymandering overall, but they discussed California Proposition 50 as a response to the Trump administration. Common Cause's California director, Darius Kemp, says what California is trying to do differs from gerrymandering in other states like Texas.
At first glance, it did look like California leaders were attempting to play the same game as Texas, which was lock in a partisan advantage. But once state leaders clarified their intent, it became obvious that what they were trying to do was put a check on the presidential power. That has definitely just made the context change broadly. Our principles, though, have never changed. What changed is just the political reality. This is no longer about one state just gaming the system and doing their own kind of internal machinations. It's a national power grab designed to make Trump unaccountable to all voters.
Darius Kemp says members of Common Cause and other people in California he's talked to know that California's redistricting plans are situational.
They understand the moment we are in, and they want us to make sure that we meet that moment. We're trying to counterbalance what is going on in other states and what the president is trying to do. And so they understand that this is an exception and not the rule.
Omar Nureldin is the senior vice president of policy and litigation for Common Cause. He calls the situation with gerrymandering a mess, and he blames leaders from both Republican and Democratic parties for causing it.
We are in this mess because Congress has failed to act, the Supreme Court has failed to act, and political leaders of both parties have failed to act. And so this is a crisis of the making of leaders across all of our branches of government. And at the same time, the reason why Common Cause developed fairness criteria for this mid-decade redistricting battle is because we understood, as Darius mentioned, this is a national power grab.
Last month, Common Cause released fairness criteria for evaluating redistricting by six main points. The points focus on proportionality, public participation, racial equity, federal reform, endorsement of independent redistricting, and time limitation. Nureldin says Common Cause needs to use their resources to push back against power grabs.
In order to counterbalance, we understood that we have to exert our resources in the fights that are most urgent to stop this power grab. And that's why our fairness criteria helps guide us in a principled way of where to direct our resources to fight the most urgent threat.
Missouri's Republican-led House turned aside Democratic objections Tuesday and passed a plan backed by President Donald Trump to redraw the state's congressional districts so that Republicans could win an additional seat in the closely divided U.S. House of Representatives. Last month, Texas redrew its U.S. House districts at Trump's prodding to give Republicans a chance at winning five additional congressional seats. California countered with its own revised map aimed at giving Democrats a shot at winning 5 more House seats. The California plan still needs voter approval in a November special election. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perrazzo.
In national news, UN General Assembly votes overwhelmingly to support two-state solution to establish Palestinian state, KPFA's Sophia Rais Alfeni reports.
For those who want peace, come and join us. For those who want to save lives, come and join us.
That was Riyad Mansour, the permanent observer of the State of Palestine for the UN General Assembly, speaking after the overwhelming vote in favor of the New York Declaration.
For those who want to put an end to the war in the Gaza, this aggression, come and join us. For those who want the release of the hostages and the prisoners, come and join us.
The New York Declaration outlines tangible, time-bound, and irreversible steps towards a two-state solution, and was adopted by 142 votes in favor, 10 against, and 12 abstentions at the General Assembly Friday. Mansour invited those who show opposition or who have abstained to join them in the shared goal of achieving peace.
Yes, we have a detailed roadmap for peace, and we invite the party that is still pushing the option of war and destruction and attempts to eliminate the Palestinian people and steal their land to listen to the sound of reason, to the sound of the logic of dealing with this issue peacefully, and for the overwhelming message that has resonated in this General Assembly.
But today's progress comes less than 24 hours after Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, signed off on a settlement expansion plan that would cut across land that Palestinians hope to claim for a future state. Netanyahu stated, "There will never be a Palestinian state. Quote, this place is ours," end quote, during his visit to the site where thousands of new housing units would be added through the expansion plan in the occupied West Bank. But back in the United Nations General Assembly chamber, Israel's representative, Danny Dannon, strongly opposed the UN's endorsement of a two-state solution.
This one-sided declaration will not be remembered as a step toward peace, only as another hollow gesture that weakens this assembly's credibility. This is not diplomacy. It is theater, a carefully staged performance for headlines, not for peace. It doesn't shorten the war, it prolongs it. It does not weaken Hamas, it rewards them. It does not advance negotiations, it undermines them.
Israeli officials have long criticized the UN over what they say is their failure to condemn Hamas. But this declaration, presented by France and Saudi Arabia, includes some of the sharpest criticism of Hamas ever endorsed by the UN. The text condemned the attacks perpetrated by Hamas on October 7th and calls for the release of all hostages held in Gaza. However, the United States representative, Morgan Ortagus, claimed that the advancement of the two-state solution only rewards Hamas.
The United States will not participate in this insult to the victims of October 7th, but we will continue to lead real-world efforts to end the fighting and to deliver a permanent peace. This war could end tomorrow if Hamas was disarmed, released hostages, and surrendered. But Hamas continues to refuse. Today's resolution is yet another counterproductive gesture that only rewards Hamas, drags out the war, and undercuts the very diplomatic efforts to free the hostages and end the suffering in Gaza, which the New York Declaration claims to support.
As the United Nations General Assembly welcomed a two-state solution, people in the Gaza Strip continued to endure heavy artillery fire and bombing from Israeli forces, with Friday's death toll reaching 59 just after the results were announced. This vote precedes an upcoming UN summit on September 22nd in New York, in which France, the UK, Canada, and several other nations have made promises to formally recognize the Palestinian state. Meanwhile, the Palestinian president and other representatives have been prevented from traveling to New York for the UN summit after US authorities denied them visas. Observers note that such a blanket ban is unprecedented in the history of the United Nations. The Danish member of the European Parliament has called for Europe to propose a temporary transfer to Geneva to uphold the Palestinians' right to be represented and to send a clear signal to Trump. This is Sophia Rais Elfeni for Pacifica Evening News, KPFA.
And in National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. While dozens of tribal colleges and universities, or TCUs, are facing funding cuts that could shut them down, a new report highlights some of the economic impacts generated from tens of thousands of alumni. It's meant to show the positive return on investments for students, taxpayers, and society. KJZZ's Gabriel Piatrazio has details.
The study was commissioned by the nonprofit American Indian Higher Education Consortium. It found that over 40,000 former students added nearly $4 billion to the U.S. economy between 2022 and 2023. That data was gathered from the 35 higher education institutions.
The TCUs are a direct expression of sovereignty over our education systems that drive job creation in our local economies, that are land and community-based, and that are also grounded in Native culture and traditions.
Anna Wake Rose is Cherokee and the nonprofit's president and CEO. Democratic Congresswoman Melanie Stansberry, whose state is home to three TCUs, is hopeful for stable Biden-era funding.
As we're headed into the last 2 weeks before the end of the fiscal year, the White House and Republicans have yet to produce a viable budget. So we anticipate that the cuts that were proposed in Trump's budget are not going to go through because of the continuing resolution.
I'm Gabriel Piatrazio.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced this summer that it plans to reorganize the agency. One of the largest Alaska Native advocacy organizations says that change could harm tribal food security programs. The Alaska Desk's Ayolna Naiden reports.
The U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, announced in July a plan to reorganize the department, citing the need to decrease spending and bureaucracy. That plan is not final, but the current proposal includes consolidation of tribal relations programs and personnel, according to the memorandum of the decision. But leaders of the First Alaskans Institute say that could diminish tribal voices and harm regional agriculture and food security. Last month, the nonprofit submitted a comment to USDA about the plan, asking the agency to consult with tribes. Apargaruk Roy Agloin is the president of the First Alaskans Institute.
Food security for Native communities, it's not just a policy issue. It's really a matter of survival, cultural continuity, and self-determination.
The USDA Office of Tribal Relations was created in 2010 after tribal farmers argued in court that the department discriminated against them. Tikan Galbraith is the chief operating officer of First Alaskans Institute. He says that the USDA's reorganization plan might move the Office of Tribal Relations from the higher-up secretarial level of the department. He says the change could diminish tribal access to USDA programs. Galbraith says that access to USDA programs is especially important in light of the changing environment.
The change in the migratory patterns and the decline for many of the species has raised the question for a lot of our communities of how do we continue to provide protein security for our tribal members.
USDA did not respond to the comment the First Alaskans Institute submitted last month. However, the department did respond to a request for comment from KNBA, calling the proposal plan a first step to, quote, right-size USDA's footprint, end quote. It added that the agency's critical functions would not be affected. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naidin.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Anthony Perrazzo, Sofia Raiz Alfeni, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Are you passionate about your community? Looking to report on what's happening around Mendocino? KMUD News is looking for stringer reporters from the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@kmud.org for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.